Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there this morning and all those who identify as fathers. I want to explore fatherhood this morning because for me, fatherhood is an incredibly important issue in my life and also the source of a lot of stuff. Let me start off by introducing myself for those who don't know me. I'm Eric Johnson, and I am now a human services caseworker for the Department of Human Services. I do food stamps, ACA or Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, and temporary assistance for needy families. I say now because I spent the previous 5 years as a UU hospice chaplain. I helped folks spiritually during the last 6 months of their lives, only it wasn't the last 6 months, it was usually more like 4 days. It was incredibly stressful and hard, long hours, and frankly, the outcome of my labors was simply a good and peaceful death and normative grieving. It was just too tough, and it took me away from my family at a time when they needed me most. My wife, Marty, also works for the state in Springfield, Illinois, for the Department of Revenue. She lives there during the week and travels back on the weekend. Thus, I'm functionally a single parenting for most of the week. So hospice just wasn't going to work out. Thus, I left ministry and started my job with the state in February, and I'm happy to report that I had never been happier with a career. Although DHS is very behind in its work because, frankly, the need is so great, we just had a month-long push to reduce the number of food stamp applications, which are over 30 days past due from processing, from 15,000 to, as of Friday, just over 1,000. So the need is great. But it's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful to get someone the benefits that they need. And last week, I got to erase $43,000 of medical bills from a man's life by getting him medical benefits under the Affordable Care Act. Poof. Just a couple of keystrokes, and I made $42,000 go away. People eat, mothers and fathers get financial help, all with a few keystrokes. And I also protect our taxpayers' money by keeping benefits out of the hands who shouldn't have them. So it's a lot better now than having to manage 3 to 5 deaths a week. And now I get to focus more on what I believe is one of the pivotal roles of my life, being a father to my daughters, Meredith and Lauren. It's super important to me because my own father was not that great. Honestly, he did a heck of a lot better than his dad. My grandfather abandoned my father when he was 4. My dad only saw his father once more in his life when he was 12. So yes, my dad did a heck of a lot better. But though he was in my life till he died of pancreatic cancer in 2008, he was largely absent, especially emotionally. The emotional scars of his own abandonment left him an emotional invalid. My dad was a perpetual 12-year-old. Little Johnny was off playing ball, out with his friends, making his own fun. As an adult, my father was a fabulous salesman, really unrivaled. He could walk into a room of 100 people and know half of them, and in 20 minutes, know the other half. Not only that, come away with invitations to weddings and bar mitzvahs and the like. But he was always working. I can count on one hand the number of times he played ball with me. There was no intimacy with me. The most intimate thing we did, and only did as adults when I would come and visit, was to watch war movies after Mom had gone to bed. We did love to do that. But my father really couldn't feel his way out of a wet paper bag. Those of you who know me can tell you that I am very extroverted and energetic, and that's my father in me. But that I am very involved with my girls, and I like doing RE. I taught the OWL class, our human sexuality curriculum, along with Juliet Crone-Willis and Robin Berkeley last year. That is a reaction to my dad. It is an intentional choice that I made to be different when I became a father. This choice was solidified when my father died in 2008. He wrote me a letter which was given to me after he died. I was very excited because I thought that I would learn how my father felt about me. His minister had insisted that he write both my mom and I letters. I'm an only child. My mom's letter was a rambling letter about how he loved her. And my letter was a single paragraph saying that he hoped that I became a Christian so that he could see me in heaven. Not, I love you. Not, I'm proud of you. Not even a word of advice. Simply hope that he could see me again in heaven. I now realize that my 5 years as a hospice chaplain was one giant therapy session to work through that one paragraph. Working in hospice was a fabulous therapy, and the cool thing about it is I get paid for it. Working daily with death teaches you immense lessons about life. What is life worth living? What's a bad life? What is important at the end? A million other lessons. I had a lot of driving time in between hospice clients, as they are not all in one nursing home or in a private home. I had a lot of time to think, and I would smoke my pipe in the car in between appointments and think about a lot of it. So what follows are some of the things that I worked out for me. Take it or leave it. Please be self-differentiated, meaning if it works for you, great. If it triggers you or makes you angry, simply chuck it out. Please know that I don't mean to make you angry or trigger you by what I say. Fatherhood, and by that I mean, well, to tell you the truth, I can't totally define it. I am male, and it's the parenting label that society sticks on my parenting. That's it. I frankly hate the terms fatherhood and fathering, etc. They box me. And frankly, as a UU, I have an immediate and visceral reaction to being boxed. One of my favorite professors in seminary, the late Jean Betke Elstein, did an amazing work on this for mothers in her book, Women and War. And she found in literature and historical accounts two dominant archetypes of mothers, the Spartan mother and the beautiful soul. The Spartan mother recounts the tale of the Spartan mother in ancient Greece who sent her sons off to battle. The house servant returned from the battlefield crying, "Mother, your sons have been slain." And she backhands the servant, and she looks down at the servant on the ground with fire in her eyes and roars, "That is not my concern. Did we win?" Her mother's role was to produce warriors, to produce a certain type of man to service the state. Her feelings were irrelevant. It was a role of duty which boxed the woman in to an uncaring, critical role, but which produced the greatest male warriors of history. The other role was that of the beautiful soul. Think Victorian England. And this, in this role, the woman is the paragon of beauty, virtue, and grace, and not to be sullied with the cares and concerns of politics or industry. She was to stay in the parlor. Think of the upstairs women in Downton Abbey before the war. Those of you who know the show Downton Abbey, before the war. Because what happened in the war? They got jobs. They became independent. They started to take an active role in public life. But before then, they were confined to the parlor. And not to be sullied, literally sullied, with politics or industry. And again, they were boxed in. And they were boxed in order to keep them from taking part in public life and in certain, in a huge section of private life. They were boxed in by their role as mothers. So going back to fathers, let's think of the movies that dads, fathers, have fathers in them, and think of the role that they're playing. I looked this up this morning online and got lots of them. But I want to see what you say. Whenever I do services, I love to do interactive stuff. I frankly don't like to lecture and preach a lot. I like interaction. So I'll start, because this is the coolest, and I wanted to get to say the coolest one. Think of the role of father, Darth Vader in Star Wars. Right, can't be topped, I know it. The role that he played was bad father, was absent father, bad father, and who finally kind of makes it right in the end, right at the end. Can anyone think of other in movies or literature or anything like that, popular culture, so to speak? Mrs. Doubtfire. Okay, the role that the father played in that one.
Kind of reminds me a little of your father. He wanted to be the kid and then that lost him what he needed, and he came to the realization that he needed to be an adult.
Right, incompetent father at the beginning. Then, through a radical change, learns competence. Any others?
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey and Liar, Liar. Okay, role. Can you think of role?
He's so focused on himself and his job that he's always making promises and breaking them at work, and then same happy ending.
Right, and then the magic, the transformation happens. Also pay attention to the mechanisms of change. Okay? That's also important to happen. Any others?
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. Okay, roll.
Boy Next Door, he falls under his own sword for anybody else.
Right.
And then has a hard time justifying his own business.
Okay. Great.
The dad and little women.
Okay.
You're hard to even see him. He's like all wise and all knowing. He's like God. He's never there.
But he's never there.
Interesting,
very, very interesting. The other?
Paul Ingalls,
okay. Roll.
He's sort of like a paradigm, I think. He's like, he watches over and he guides, but he also gives
space, okay. Any other positive?
Father knows best.
Okay. What's the role? What's the role there? Tell me about the role.
He knows
everything. Okay, kind of a, well, in Norse mythology, you have the Odin or Votan, and one of the titles is All Father. It's someone who knows. So there's a knowledge theme going on that exactly Father knows best. It's in the title. Any other, can you think of any other positive or good role models? Atticus Finch. What makes Atticus a good father?
His almost unending patience with his children. And
patience, just like the story.
Listens so marvelously.
Right. I think of Dr. Huxtable from the Cosby Show. He's also very active, very involved. The thing that I liked about his show was that he was also vulnerable. He made mistakes. Things got messed up invariably, and they all learned. So it wasn't the kind of Ward Cleaver, Leave It to Beaver kind of father of, I know what's best, this is what we're doing, this is how it's going to happen. It was a dialogue, and it was a interaction. Any other?
Well, if we're going contemporary, Blue Bloods has three generations of fathers interacting, and who's fathering whom.
Okay.
I was sitting here thinking of this whole time, and the only thing that's coming to mind is one of the plays we saw yesterday, Henry IV. And at first, Henry IV seems like a bad father because he's absent and he's wrapped up in his job of being the king. He bemoans the fact that his son is a lazy, no good type. However, he does meet with him several times, and while he expresses scorn for the way his son is acting, he also tells his son that he can be better. And finally, in the end, he challenges and says, look, we got to go to war, and I need you, and you're either going to step up or and do these responsibilities and be responsible, or the world's going to chew you up and you're going to get killed out there. And the son finally is able to grasp the example of his father's been trying to set. He's been setting a good example because he's been doing his job. And he has been there, but he's just been letting the son run wild. And then by the end of the play, they reconciled and they realized Henry V realizes that his father was actually a good example and that he can live up to his father's expectations. And his father, at the same time, also realizes that actually his son's pretty fantastic, and he recognizes that in him, and it was just kind of cool.
Okay.
So it's not as bad of a father should believe as it seemed at first.
It's complex, as everything. Any others? Captain Von Trapp. Okay, Isabel, what makes him a good dad? Right, Maria. Right. You know what I also like about Captain Von Trapp is he stands up to injustice. And he denies the Anschluss when Austria was annexed. He fights against that, the annexation. So excellent example. Any others?
Vito Corleone.
Vito Corleone.
He was absent a lot of times, but when it mattered, he was there for his kids.
Okay.
It's
interesting because that was in the online when I looked it up. Again, this is not statements about what's good, what's bad. We're just doing examples and playing with examples. Any other ones? And I did hear you say that, but see, it's not your dad hasn't made it to popular culture yet. Give him a couple years, you know. Keep the expectations low, but then. Andy Griffith. Oh my gosh, I didn't even think of that one. That's excellent. What made Andy Griffith in that? I don't want to put, sorry, I didn't want to put anything on it.
He's always that shining example of doing the right thing.
Right.
He's always showing the kid. And basically, it's doing that.
Right. Right. Boy, I totally forgot that one. That's excellent. That's right, Ron Howard. Ron Howard sure did. And he does. Well, he was an amazing man. Yes, Mary. Yes, and if I remember correctly, gosh, it's been a long time since. He what? Okay, at the Muni. Okay, so here's a father who's confronted with a son who's different and moving through that difference. So that's excellent. And being flexible. Any other? Yes?
Steve Martin and Parenthood.
Yes.
That's one of them. The whole movie, the whole family is just a whole bunch of different archetypes of parenthood. Mm-hmm. But Steve Martin's character, he's at the beginning of the movie, he's the epitome of the controlling, living for your kid dad.
Right.
And by the end of the movie, he realizes that if he keeps holding on so tight, he's going to die.
Right.
So he relaxes, and he lets everybody be who they're going to be, and he appreciates his children instead of trying to change them into his image.
Right.
And it's just something that I think a lot of people go through.
Right. Reminds me of... anybody who's seen the show, the movie, A Little Miss Sunshine?
So,
the father figures in that. You've got all kinds of father figures in that.
Hal from Malcolm in the Middle.
Okay.
One of my favorite dads.
Okay.
I think because he loves his wife. You know, he models that for the family.
Right. Okay. Okay. Good.
Not a good dad. That's all I can say.
Okay. Okay. Great. Okay, so now we've got all these people in our minds. Let's synthesize just a little bit, okay, before I move on. What are the qualities of a good father, good dad? What are the qualities?
Compassion.
Love.
Patience.
Patience.
Presence.
Presence. What else? Okay.
Consistency.
Okay. I think also vulnerability, the ability to be vulnerable and to be flexible. Okay. Qualities of a poor father.
Absence.
Neglect. Inconsistency. We can reverse some of them.
Indifference.
Indifference.
Yeah.
Indifference. Apathy.
Dominance.
What's kind of know-it-all? What's the fancy word for that?
Arrogant.
There you go. Cruel. Overprotective. Okay.
Controlling.
There we go. All right.
Violent.
Yeah. It can. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So going on. I want to give you my favorite quote of all time. I have not found a single quote that hits me more squarely. My absolute favorite quote. And as it so happens, it is also by my favorite father figure, Mr. Rogers. Love isn't a perfect state of caring. And I'm going to read this a couple times so you get it. Love isn't a perfect state of caring. It is an active noun like struggle. To love someone is to strive to accept that person exactly the way he or she is right here and now. Love isn't a perfect state of caring. It's an active noun like struggle. To love someone is to strive to accept that person exactly the way he or she is right here and now. Now, let's exegete this passage of Holy Scripture like it is. Mr. Rogers is saying there is no perfect state. Or to put it into our discussion of fathers, the perfect father does not exist. It's not Ward Cleaver. It's not any model we might think of. It's not even Mr. Rogers. I tell my kids, I will put you in therapy somehow. I'm sure even Mr. Rogers' kids have issues because of him. There is no perfect state. It's a very Zen-like statement, isn't it? Thus, these models that we have just mentioned from our movies, none are ideal. They're all pointing to something or to some quality, some aspect. Fatherhood, to continue this, is an active noun-like struggle. And God, is that just so perfect? And struggle it is. Parenting is struggle. When you add to that gender issues or masculinity issues, it's a mess. And no wonder we spend most of our lives struggling to be a good parent, and why men struggle to be good fathers. And to finish this little bit of quote up, I think one of the most important aspects of parenting and fatherhood is to strive, not always to achieve, to get it right, because again, there is no perfect state or right action of fatherhood. To accept our children exactly, and look at that exactly. He was very clear on that word exactly. If our child is gay, straight, queer, quirky, strong-willed, mousy, whatever, to accept them exactly as they are right here, right now. Wow, just think of it if we could get a little closer to that. If our dads had gotten just a little bit closer to that, how would our lives have been affected. My dad might have said that he loved me and was proud of me in that letter, no matter what religion I was. We all might have been profoundly affected by radical acceptance of how we were right then and there. Think to yourself for a moment about how you wish your dad, your father, had accepted you. I'll just let you think for a minute. And now that we've done just that little exercise, and I'm breaking that off a little bit earlier because it is a triggering thing. We've taken Mr. Rogers' scripture out of context, the scripture of the gospel, the good news of Fred, is about love, not fatherhood. So let's put it back into its proper context. St. Fred was talking about love, that love is not a perfect state of caring. He's talking to us as humans, as mothers, fathers, parents, funny people, sad people, angry people, gentle angry people, as we use like to call ourselves. He's talking about the generic topic of love. But love calls us to action. It's not actually enough to just accept. The citizens in this country can accept or learn to accept marriage equality. Is that enough? Maybe for right now, just because that's a good step. Is it enough to accept transgendered folk? Maybe for now, just because that's a good step. But I feel that love calls us to do more than that. I feel that love calls us to intentional action. I spend time with my girls as an intentional act, as an intentional improvement over my father. I share intimacy, I lecture, I discipline, I guide, I strive to teach and show the best way forward as I see it as an intentional action. I make myself vulnerable to failure and error as an intentional action. I apologize, reroute, and try like the Dickens to be flexible as an intentional action. Thus, the whole thing becomes a cycle. I strive to accept, to love. I stretch with intention through love. I accept and reroute with intention. I accept, stretch with love, accept with love, stretch with love, accept with love. And thus it goes like this. And thus do I hope with faith that I will improve and those around me will improve. So it's actually not so much of a cycle or circle, but rather an upward spiral. That's of acceptance, intentionality, acceptance, intentionality, getting better, improving. And what's the opposite of that? It's discrimination with hate, stagnate with hate, or maybe apathy and indifference. That's moving down. Discrimination and stagnation. Not doing anything, not being anywhere for anyone. Stretch with love, accept with love. Applied to fatherhood, my fatherhood today, my dad had no models. My dad had no father in his life. He did the very best he could. He didn't show me much love, but I can show my girls love. Sometimes I do it incorrectly, but I try to learn and I try to show them love and accept them as they are right here, right now. And may we all strive to accept ourselves and others right here, right now, and engage and struggle with the active noun of love. Blessed Father's Day.